Hello, everyone. Welcome back. This is Chander in Palo Alto.
Hi, and this is Arne in Oslo.
So we are still in January 2021, our second episode of the year. This is Valley Nordic, a podcast about business, culture, and technology from two perspectives, Silicon Valley and Norway or Nordic countries. And you will see if you're new, the hosts are also from two different backgrounds and perspectives, one entrepreneur and one venture capitalist. And the topic today is Tesla. And I think this is probably the most talked about company in Valley, although they're a car company, but they're valued and talked about as a tech company. So I thought we'd cover Tesla today. And they announced their earnings yesterday.
Yesterday.
You want to maybe just give a brief update from numbers, Arne, and then I can cover the history, and then we can get into the valuations, and which I think is the most contentious thing about Tesla.
Yeah, so if you look at the Q4 accounts, now this is not a company we've covered quarter on quarter, but just to get a feel for where the company is at, and the revenues for the fourth quarter was 10.7 billion dollars, which is an all-time high for a quarter, and was slightly higher than expectations. Net income was 270 gap and 270 million gap. So you know, it's a profitable company, but not with a huge margin. And the gross margin. GAAP gross margin was 19.2% for the quarter. And one of the interesting parts about it is that in addition to selling cars, I guess we'll get back to the main business of Tesla currently is to sell cars. And clearly producing a car has a cost, hence the gross margin in 20% range. But they're also selling regulatory credits. So they had $400 million in regulatory credits. So essentially, these are credits they're selling to other car makers because Tesla's vehicles are more environmentally friendly and others have to buy these credits because they are less environmentally friendly. And so the regulatory credits, their income from regulatory credits is actually bigger than their profit after all, which is kind of an interesting feature. And whilst and gross margin of 20% is maybe normal for a car maker, that's odd for a tech company, the type of tech companies that we normally talk about. And I can say that the revenues were slightly higher than the market expected, whereas the profits were lower. So the share price fell a little bit. And so essentially, what did the company deliver? They delivered let's see, 180,000 cars for the quarter. And for the year 2020, Tesla ended up delivering approximately 500,000 cars for the year.
Okay, thanks, Arne. That's what I was going to ask you. I think most of the income is from selling the credits.
It depends on what you attribute your revenue streams. That is a question. But of course, without those credits, which is a very high gross margin business, they would not be profitable. That is a way to look at it.
And they also own SolarCity. So those numbers are not in here.
So they do, if you look at away from from like the cars themselves, they do a few things. They deploy solar panels through Solar City. So they deployed 86 megawatt of solar capacity for the quarter. They also deploy energy storage, so battery packs. And they deployed 1,584 megawatt hours of battery packs. So that is one line of their business. Both of these are smaller businesses than the automotive side. And the final thing is they operate supercharger stations. So they have a charging network where they, you know, if you're driving and you're far from your own charging station, then you can use the supercharger station. And that's actually a very important part of the automotive business, even if it's essentially just a way of fueling the cars.
Yeah, thanks, Arne. So it's unbelievable story how the company came about and what they have been able to accomplish. It's, you know, I find it fascinating. And their success is kind of like a series of miracles, which is a miracle in itself. So many times they were so close to closing down and they came out off that successfully. So for those of you who don't know, Tesla is mainly a car company, which is an electric car, and they have their own network of charging stations. So it's like having, let's say, Volkswagen has its own gas stations all over the country. And the car itself is, you know, it's like when iPhone came out, it changed what a smartphone meant. I think we can say Tesla changed what car means. You can now, you know, get autopilot with an over-the-air update. You press a button, they charge you $5,000, and your car now has autopilot. So it's unbelievable. And you,
which is neither completely auto nor approved for the time being.
Yeah, but it's still autopilot. I mean, the current all other cars have autopilot or something like that. It's not fully auto, but I think it's pretty good. Then other thing you may have seen, like in all the other luxury cars, take anyone, Mercedes or BMW, Audi, you can't figure out the controls. It's like a complete mess. There's so many buttons. They just put the big iPad in the car. And they also provided, it might be 4 or 5G now, but originally it was 3G. So product itself, I think it's really, really good. They're changing what a car is, just like iPhone changed what a phone is.
The parallel you can say is that, you know, before the iPhone, the phone was a phone. When the iPhone came, it was kind of a computer with a phone in it,
mm-hmm.
a pocket computer. And Tesla is in a way the same thing in that it's kind of a computer with wheels. You know, so it's a platform that's being updated and all the things that you described.
Yeah, yeah. So I think after I cover brief history, we'll get into the valuation debate. So I think there isn't any debate about the product is just awesome. The debate is about how much is the company worth? What is the valuation of the company? So I
think you're right mainly about the product being awesome. And I think most Tesla owners are raving fanatics and huge fans of the company. So you can even discuss whether it's a religion more than a car company. That said, there are a few people who are unhappy, but they're a small minority. And that's typically that they've had issues where when they break down, they take in the car for service and you don't get it back in a long time and the paint is terrible.
Yeah.
Which is, you know, so there are specific people who are very unhappy about specific elements of it, but I would say that 90% of the owners are raving fans and they would never have anything else.
Yeah. And I can give an example of this, you know, fanness. That's also, I think it's unbelievable. So in the US, before Tesla, you had to go through a dealership to buy a car. And Tesla decided they will sell directly, but people want to, you know, test drive. So this, it's a state level law, like states decide what you can do and cannot do. Some states allow you to, you know, people come in, you have Tesla employees at the, you know, store, they test drive and they go home and buy it online. But some states don't even allow that. So like Texas does not allow that. So what's happening there is Tesla owners are volunteering at some location where they help people test drive their cars and so they can buy it. So that it's all volunteer. So I find that unbelievable. Like a product can inspire that much passion in people.
No.
Okay, so now let's go back in time. Before we get into Tesla, I want to talk about electric vehicles. It's not that new of a thing. So in late, you know, 19th century, 1800 something and early 1900s, the market was for cars or whatever they were called at the time, automobiles, was equally split one third among gas or oil-based and water-based and then electric. And I think in 1908, when Ford came out with Model T, that's when it flipped and everything moved to the gasoline or oil side of things. So the idea of electric car is, you know, at least 120-year-old. But nothing much was happening in that space for last, let's say, 50 years. They kept on making, the automobile companies kept on making things better, but they didn't think of a fundamental shift. They, you know, had a different number of cylinders, they added gadgets, but there wasn't any fundamental shift about to redesign the car, all car companies around the world. So there was a, I think that's less important, but I think I have the core of the story. So Elon Musk had made money with PayPal and before that another startup. So he was worth 150 or something million, 100, between 100 and 200 million from these two exits. And he started SpaceX with that. And then some guy here in the Valley was looking to start like a electric car company. He was a student at Stanford and he was looking for money. Then somebody connected him with some other person who was also into cars. Then they discovered this like a car kit company, which made really fast cars, but they were not really for, you know, the road. They were just for driving. So with all these, you know, different people, different connections, Elon Musk ended up being Series A funder of Tesla, T0. So he's not the founder of Tesla. So he invested $6 million in Series A, and then more in B from his own pocket, not a VC, because you can imagine, you know, people like Arne won't invest in a car company. So he invested from his own pocket, then B, C, and it's, I forget the actual number, but basically he kept on investing money in the company from his own pocket. He even took a loan with his stock in SpaceX as, you know, the guarantee for that loan, and invested it in Tesla. And I think in 2007 or 8, the guy who was the CEO of Tesla at the time, Musk had him fired because he felt he wasn't getting as much limelight as the CEO was getting. He was 2006 inventor of the year or something like that, the previous CEO. And they hired two more guys. I think one of the Flextronics CEO was CEO for less than a year of Tesla. So a lot of people came, well, three, four people went in and out. And eventually, I think 2008, Musk became the CEO. And they also moved from, you know, making a just because of his vision, they got into the sedans thing. The first car, you may remember, was a Roadster. And he at that time wanted a car in which his wife would want to sit, or wife at the time. And so that's how, you know, there were a lot of in between. They almost went bankrupt a few times, but Elon Musk found money somehow to keep it going. So there's a role of government here, and I don't remember the year. I think 2010 or 12. Department of Energy invested almost $500 million in the company, so that they, on a condition that they will manufacture, do the manufacturing in the U.S. And then they got lucky again because of 2008 financial crisis. Toyota and GM had a joint venture to make cars in California, in Fremont. So he was able to buy that factory, which has the capacity to produce 500,000 cars a year, for $42 million. And cost to build that factory was over $1 billion. So... a lot of things, you know, just fell in place in time. And another story I learned, I think around 2013 or 14, he was, I think, going to go out of money, or Tesla again. So he went to Larry Page of Google, one of the Google founders, to have him buy it. And when he comes from, so Elon Musk lives in LA. When he comes here, he stays with Larry Page. So they agreed on a deal to buy the company for $6 billion, and Elon Musk would be still the CEO and get to run the show. But they had this other like campaign going. They were, all the employees were calling people to book Model S, or buy Model S, and then that campaign somehow worked, or something happened that they got the money. So that deal didn't happen, Google buying Tesla. And so then, you know, the whole stock market, it inspired so much passion in people. They're holding on to stock, even though, as we will see with Arna, this showing how the valuation is kind of way overpriced. So that's how it got to where we are today, which is 2021, January. Couple of things which I think are interesting that I will mention are, one, the first Model S, the chassis is based on the Mercedes CLS. Like the first prototype they did, they just bought a Mercedes CLS and used that chassis to show people. And then the models that come out, they, you know, stand for the word sexy. So you have Model S, you have Model E, not E. They couldn't get E because Ford has a trademark for that. So they inverted the E do three. So that's why you have model three, and then you have model X, and then there's model Y coming out. So that's what the model names mean. And the original inspiration of Tesla was the Toyota Prius, because they saw the adoption of that, and it was a cool thing in LA where Musk lived. So this, you know, he had made this even cooler. Okay, so that's all the history of what, you know, you can spend hours on just the history. It's so interesting. I think somebody should make a movie about this. I read some of the history in preparation for this, and I just couldn't stop reading more. It's fascinating. Did I miss anything important, or you want to add to the history, Arne?
Well, I think obviously there's been a lot of ups and downs for this company. I think one element, kind of like the story about almost being sold to Google, it was also a discussion about having the company bought by Apple in much newer time as well.
Yeah, I remember. You're right. But I think what I remember is Tim Cook refused to meet with Musk, so he wasn't happy.
Something like that.
Yeah. It's so interesting. And it's like miracle. If you read the story, they almost went bankrupt I don't know how many times. And I've been at startups where, you know, we went bankrupt. We got saved somehow. You know, miracle happened once, twice, but after third, fourth time, we were bankrupt, or not bankrupt, but we couldn't raise the money. And that happens with, you know, I would say most startups. But here, it did something, it kept on, miracle after miracle kept on happening.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, let's talk valuations now.
Yeah, so just to frame it, so one of the, if you look at the share price, so the share price now, it reached 900 a week ago or something like that, share price. But for like 3-4 years, it was sort of, share price was moving between 40 and 60, pretty much up and down between 40 and 60. Mm-hmm. And let's say 1st of January, 2020, so a year and 20 some days ago, the share price was 130. It started to ascend. 130, think of that a year ago. And then a week ago, it hit 900. So that's like, what will that be? 7 times multiple on a year basis. Mm-hmm. So the company has just skyrocketed over the year through the pandemic. And the company is now valued, it depends a little bit on time of day and exact stock price. But for argument's sake, or sort of for rough precision, the company is valued at $800 billion. So Tesla is now worth then more than Facebook. Yet the turnover is smaller. The revenues are much, much smaller. Mm-hmm. And as opposed to Facebook, which is super profitable, Tesla is barely making a profit. So the company is, let's do round multiples again. It's valued at 20 times annual sales. And keep in mind, this is a company with a 20% gross margin or thereabouts. And it's valued at 1,600 times earnings.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And to continue that, it's valued pretty much above the rest of the car industry combined.
Yeah, that's what I found most interesting. Tesla is valued more than the entire car industry.
Yep.
So, but you can say, I think its difference is, you know, the margins, well, not even margins, I think digital versus physical nature of things. at some point, Amazon had similar numbers. I remember their PE was, 3,000 or something. And their margins, for e-commerce before AWS were like less than 5-6%. And they keep on growing, and now they can justify their value more. You see that same in Tesla, can they grow into that valuation in next few years?
It's very hard to see that. So just put that in perspective. Tesla has a market share in the car market of 0.3-0.4% of all the cars sold in the world, or vehicles, light vehicles. Yet they're valued like the rest of the 99.6 or 7% of the market. So something is a bit out of tune there, and it's hard to see how they can, it's not like super scalable like software where you can just make more copies. You have to build factories to so say you wanted to take 50% of the car market in the world, the number of factories you would have to build is just incredible, right? So it, or take over or buy or whatever, it would take a really, really long time and be a seismic shift, right? So I think the valuation is just really hard to justify in normal economic terms. And me not being able to justify it is one thing, but the confusion amongst analysts as to how to value it is staggering. So if you look at like any company or normal company on Wall Street, you would look at analysts' view, and they would say, well, we think a price target is this, and therefore we have a buy or hold or sell advice around this stock. And typically these would say, well, we're expecting a 20% depreciation or 10% drop or something like that. That would be the normal range. If you look at Wall Street analysts' view on what the target share price is, so mind it's 830 plus minus now. The targets at Wall Street are from 40 to 1,036. That range is staggering. And secondarily, if you start looking at how they break down the valuation of the company.
Say that again, 40 to 1,036?
Yeah.
Have you ever seen a wider range for a price?
I have not. And the staggering thing is kind of like, okay, when you look at what do you value the company at? What's the value of it, right? The explanations are crazy different, right? So the people who do 40, right? They look at, okay, well, they're an automotive company, and if they grow the rate that they're planning and they're priced like another automotive company and they keep, doubling the volumes for the next 5 years, the value of that would be 40. That's how you get to that number, kind of. So I looked at one that had a price target of 540, which is significantly down from where it is now. They value the core auto manufacturing business at 254 of the 540. Then they say, well, this is a platform where you can, have network-based services on, because it's a computer that's connected to the internet and you can sell value-added services. That opportunity to sell services to a fleet is worth 155 on top of the 254 of selling cars. And then they say, well, a part of it is selling batteries and powertrains to others. We can strap on some mobility and ride sharing services on top of this because it you know, you have the autopilot coming, and then, you know, we can have financial services, insurances, and energy businesses on top. That's a part of it. And they sort of break it down, but the two main contributors is like the auto manufacturing and the network service business on top of that. So that's like a breakdown scenario with some components. In yesterday's earnings call, Elon Musk was asked how can you justify this valuation? And he pretty much discounted the auto manufacturing part of the company altogether. He attributed the main value of the company in the future opportunity of self-driving ride services.
Mm.
And so he argues that that's the main value of the company. Whereas the most bullish analyst on Wall Street says, well, you know, it's the best self-driving car. The autopilot is the best self-drive because they have millions and millions of miles of data every day. And that trains the best autopilot. The autopilot is the whole value of the business.
Mm.
So not only is the range all over the place, but they don't actually even agree on what is the value of the business. The explanations are just all over the place.
That tells you how much do these guys know.
Yeah.
Analysts, yeah.
But, it's very hard to look at it certainly with, okay, these are the components now. These are the trajectories of growth, and these are the cash flows coming out of that and the asset value and come to the number now. That's just not entirely possible to do. So you have to believe in some future opportunity that's worth a lot of money.
Yeah.
In my mind, that's the only way to get to the price now. That said, I think, I don't know, I'll let you comment on this, but I think there's also some other explanations that's driven the price to where it is, but I can get back to that. I'll let you have a go at these fundamentals first.
Well, the lesson I draw from this are the Wall Street analysts don't know much. They're good at analyzing existing businesses, but not new ones. But, you know, it's just unknown. It's like, you know, my favorite investor is Charlie Munger. He said, you know, don't buy it and don't short it because we don't know. It may turn into and like the first and most prominent autonomous vehicle company. And that may justify the valuation so they can grow into the valuation. That may take 10 years, 20 years, who knows? Or it may not happen. But if you short it, then, you know, based on, you know, car company valuations, existing ones, then you don't know the market will switch its view. So you're going based on, you know, the autonomous thing doesn't happen or people realizing it's overvalued. It's too risky to have that short. And then your money will be tied up for a long time without seeing any return. So my reaction is stay away, don't buy and don't short. Well, we are not giving financial advice. I'm saying that's my view. I'm not going to buy or short.
Well, so that I'll comment on a few other things. We did talk about, you know, is it a car company or a religion? There is a half serious theory that the valuation can be justified if it is a religion and not a car company, because that's proven to be a very profitable business over the years. So look at the Catholic Church.
Yeah.
So that's one theory. But the other thing that's kind of interesting is you talked about shorting, and that is a very timely topic these days with what's going on in the world with GameStop and AMC and short squeezes and the craziness on Robinhood. But in fact, historically, over the last few years, Tesla has been one of the most shorted companies in the market as well.
Mm-hmm.
And the people who do like traditional financial valuations on think about discounted cash flows and so forth, even at the price of 50 or something, couldn't really at the time come up and justify the valuation of the company. At the same time, the company has had a lot of fans. So when people bought cars, they were big fans of the company. They also bought shares. And it has been sort of a favorite stock with retail investors and fans.
Mm-hmm.
And so this sort of underlying sort of power struggle has been there. And as the company scaled, because when they launched the Model 3, they went from, you know, doing less than 100,000 cars a year to going to 500,000 cars a year, they managed to scale.
Mm-hmm.
And there was some dynamic going on here where the fans actually was squeezing the shorters at some point, in addition to the market gained trust in the company's ability to scale. And so I think that short squeeze and the market, so the fans and the market sort of pushing that short squeeze actually was some of the root cause of the strong ascent of the company. Secondarily, that meant that the company suddenly had a market cap, a sizable market cap, and one of the larger companies on Wall Street, which led to the inclusion of the S&P in the S&P 500.
Mm-hmm.
And the inclusion in the S&P 500 essentially means that a number of index funds and ETFs and so forth have to buy shares simply to reflect the index, which once again provides pressure to buy. So I think there are a number of sort of underlying reasons why the share price have gone up pretty aggressively over the last year.
Yeah. So for people who don't know what a short is, that's a financial instrument that if you believe the stock price will go down, you can use a short to, you know, bet on that or use that instrument to make money from that. And short squeeze is when, you know, price doesn't go down, instead of going down, it goes up. Then a lot of the people who do the shorts, they get margin calls, meaning if you have a brokerage account, you know, margin, you know, you can borrow money to short or buy stock. So that's margin. So then the company, the brokerage, if it goes above certain value and they have all these ratios, they sell the stock. Or that means not sell, but they have to buy the stock. That makes it go even higher. So that's what short squeeze means. So all that, it's kind of, you know, I think it's a movie. I find this so entertaining, what's happening with Tesla. But
I have to say, though, if it was only artificial factors and there were no one believing in the company,
mm-hmm.
no fans, no one else, that balloon would have popped. It has been sustained too long. There has not been an exodus where everybody wanted to get out, because then that balloon would have popped now. So there is an underlying current of people who believe in the company, whether for good reasons or for fan reasons.
Yeah. It's been going on for a long time. We'll see, you know, maybe it'll go on until they can justify their value. But you mentioned a lot of shorts. I don't have the latest data, but I think a couple of years ago, in the whole market, the ratio of shares in the market to shares shorted, Tesla was the highest, like close to 30%. No other company had more shorts on it than Tesla. I don't know what GameStop changed or AMC, et cetera, but this is a couple of years old data.
Yeah, so at the end of 2019, which is essentially, well, at 1st of January 2020, the share price was 130. And that's sort of where the big rise started. The 25% of shares were held by short sellers, even at that point.
Wow. Yeah. So it's, you know, I mean, if forget the valuations for a second. I mean, you know, make a product that inspires that level of fanaticism. Like, it's mainly because people just love the product. Like, and I think prior to that, that level of fanaticism happened with iPhone. You may remember the videos, like Samsung was matching and exceeding all the features, but people just wanted an iPhone. Like, can you think of other examples in last decade outside of Tesla and iPhone where people just became fanatics about the product?
Not the top of my head. There are two products in the market now that are severely undersupplied and very popular. I think there are other dynamics, but PlayStation 5 and Corona vaccines are definitely...
yes. I hope everybody gets a vaccine. And I think ideal result for that would be people forget about Corona and vaccine. Corona vaccine, it disappears. So we don't want fanatic fans of Corona vaccine. That means it'll stay around.
Yeah.
This was, you know, very entertaining episode. Thanks, Arne. Anything you want to add before we finish?
Nope. I'm all Tesla'd out. I'm waiting for my Model Y, though. But, you know, they can't build the factory in Berlin quick enough.
Yeah, so but this is a disclaimer, another disclaimer. Both of us currently don't have a Tesla. But Arne is buying one. I'm not buying one.
But I'm buying the product, not the share.
Yeah. We'll see. You might change your mind after you drive it for a few days.
I might become religious.
Yeah. Okay. Thanks, everybody, for joining us. Thanks, Arne.
Thank you.
See you. Bye.